This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
You're listening to The Breakfast Grill. I'm Lynn Mark. A. Ganapathy, Siva Balan Subramaniam, Surendran Shankar and Umar Farooq Abdullah are familiar names that we have seen in the media over the past 2 months. Four men who have died in custody. Now, this is a long-standing issue. And the question, of course, is why is this still a problem that Malaysia is facing? So to shed some light on this and to talk about why it appears to be a problem that is disproportionately affecting the Indian community, this morning we're speaking with YB Charles Santiago, Klang MP, as well as Professor Datuk Dr. Denison Jayasuriya, formerly a member of the Police Commission, as well as Suhakam. Gentlemen, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Thank you.
And thanks for the invite.
First of all, I'd like to start with you, Datuk, because you better than any of us know how long this issue has been going on. You were part of the Royal Commission that delivered its findings back in 2005, which looked at how to enhance the operation and management of the Royal Malaysian Police. It's been 16 years since the conclusion of that Royal Commission. How many of the recommendations have actually been taken up?
It's an interesting question. I don't think there has been a comprehensive presentation of all the recommendations and the outcome. Of course, the police have said a majority of it has been fulfilled in terms of equipments, the monetary allocations, the building and principles. But fundamentally, everyone knows that the IP, CMC, the culture of policing and the key aspects have not been fulfilled.
When you say culture of policing, what do you mean?
The culture of policing is one of the key outcomes of the police commission is, investigate first and then arrest, not arrest and investigate. Police as a service, bringing a world-class police force. Of course, the police have done well in its fight against the communists and so forth. But in terms of compliance to human rights standards, especially in the light of death in custody, abuse of power, accusations and perceptions of corruption, it still remains. And in fact, in reflecting, I would say we are back to the pre-2004 state in which there was a public outcry against the police clamoring for action. And there has been little change in the kind of excessive use of force.
So Charles, I also want to get your perspective as a Klang MP and someone who has been looking at this issue quite closely. Why is it that we continue to see this problem crop up again and again, and that we might even be back to where we were back in 2004?
Fundamentally, nothing has changed. It is quite clear that the fact that the former IGP can say and tell us publicly that there are cartels in the police force that are in violation of human rights, are also involved in crime. Not all of them, most of them are good, but the elements, these are powerful elements within the police force working with cartels and then working with individuals in order to cheat people, in order to cover up, and so on and so forth. And this is what some of the reasons why you need the IPTMC in the original version. I think what is important to recognize is when there are no check and balances on the way police investigate, then it becomes a problem. I mean, can you imagine we had four deaths in a period of less than 2 months, three involving the police and one involving the prison's authorities. And that tells you clearly, people who are supposed to embrace all these changes that have been proposed by civil society, by Suhakam, by the special committee to look at IPMC, since so many years, really have not gone very far.
So Charles, you said something specifically when you're talking about the IPCMC, which was the bill that looked to set up an independent police complaints of misconduct commission. You said this is why we needed the IPCMC bill in its original version. Could you tell us a little bit more about that? Why is it you think that more recent iterations of the IPCMC bill may not necessarily solve the problem as much as the first version that was put forward?
Over the years, and especially when Pakatan Harapan was in power, the original version was brought for debate. and it was roundly discredited. There were elements within the Malay community, especially from PAS and UMNO, who at that time felt that this was an attack against a Malay institution. And therefore, they said, we cannot support any attack on a Malay institution. I think the key is the power to prosecute. And that was not in the amended version.
So, Datuk, reflecting on what YB Charles has said so far, what are your thoughts on the IPCMC bill as a means to address the problem of custodial deaths? Is it up to the task, or what else might we need in this regard?
Okay. Now, I would agree with YB Charles on the IPMC. I was part of the team that proposed it. They did explore that time the difficulties Suhakam was having as a commission in the investigations they did, because the powers currently are only advisory to the government. So the Royal Police Commission took the position that it must have the power. If not, it will just be like any other committee that just advises. So I think for various reasons, whether it was PH, whether it was BN, whether it's PN now, is a political will and the issues whether they would take it up, but it's now on the grounds of society. Having said that, IPMC alone will not be able to solve all the issues, because part of the Royal Police Commission has a whole stack of recommendations vis-a-vis improving investigative policing. But the key is what I would say evidence-based policing, ensuring policemen do core policing jobs. I checked on the police commission. They say only 7% of the police are involved in criminal investigations. That's only about 7,000 policemen or so. You need to take the whole ambit of recommendations.
So both of you have raised more or less an issue of political will. So considering the publicity that we've had over custodial deaths in the past 2 months, and considering the fact that this is such a long-standing issue, here and now, do you think that there is the political will in order to push for more transparency and accountability within the police force and treatment of prisoners?
Let me just also say that there already exists a Suhakam recommendation. Mm-hmm. There was a Suhakam roundtable involving the police, NGOs, civil society groups, including the medical associations, which actually said that all police stations, especially involving investigation, should have a CCTV. There's a recommendation that police personnel should also be parked in major detention centers. And then there should be, record keeping, meaning if there's a custodial death, all the documents, police documents, including the WhatsApp messages, should be quickly given, made available to whoever is doing the investigation. So I think this is not happening, because even after the recommendations have been made, you still have, after people saying, the CCTV is not working, or the battery wasn't working, or the medical personnel was not available, you have all kinds of excuses. They are aware of the recommendations, and sometimes they also raise the issue. The new IGP actually had raised the issue and said, we are going to make sure that all prisoners will go for medical tests before investigation starts. So he's aware. The point is, how is it going to be translated in terms of a manual which the police will follow? This is the question that needs to be answered. The police are aware. It's not that they're not aware. The question is there a political will on part of the police and the government in power to ensure that the basic steps, fundamental rights of people are protected, and they are provided whatever safeguards in an investigation. They are not saying, and people have this perception, that we are protecting criminals. No, we are not protecting criminals. The point when you arrest somebody is you want to investigate. But that cannot lead to a death, and that cannot lead to a violence against that particular individual. There's no reason why people should be dying. But I think also sometimes in the police mind of the police force, the pressure is coming largely from the non-Malay community as opposed to the Malay community. And although the number of Malays, young boys who are dying in custody are higher than Indians, although in terms of percentage terms, Indians are higher, 25%. But the perception is Indians are dying more than the Malays. But actually, it's Malays who dominate the death in custody as opposed to Indians. So I think if the noise is coming from the Malay community, especially Malay political parties, then the government will move and the police will move accordingly. And given that Indians do not have this huge political power in the country, or a force to be reckoned with, the police can easily say, I can deal with the problem later.
Just to complement what YB Charles has raised, actually the police commission report has other recommendations that could be implemented actually straight away. For example, there is a recommendation to adopt code of practice relating to arrest and detention of persons. This includes what YB Charles raised on CCT cameras and so forth, ventilation, detainees' condition, the investigation time being recorded. But the key is actually an independent custody officer who then actually is held responsible for anyone arrested. Along with this, of course, in the post-death is the coroner's court and the rules that the police commission set, that the inquest must be compulsory, it must have the post-mortem with independence and so forth.
I'm speaking with YB Charles Santiago, MP for Klang, and Professor Datuk Dr. Dinesan Jayasuria, former member of the Police Commission as well as Suhakam. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
On the Breakfast Grill this morning is YB Charles Santiago, MP for Klang, and Professor Datuk Dr. Dinesan Jayasuria, former member of the Police Commission and Suhakam. So, gentlemen, I also do want to touch on the demographics issue of this, which YB Charles raised earlier. While we know that Malays do make up the largest proportion of custodial deaths, the fact of the matter is also that the Indian population makes up less than 7% of Malaysia's overall population and yet represent nearly a quarter of custodial deaths. Why is it the case that this is so disproportionate? How much does systemic racism play a part in this? Charles, perhaps we'd like to start with you.
I think the issue that you're raising has a lot to do with the socioeconomic conditions of the Indian community. And I think studies as recent as 2-3 years ago actually showed that the number of young men, and also I should say young women, involved in gangsterism has increased as a result of poverty, as a result of a lack of job. So therefore, I think we need to address the fundamental issues involving poverty in the Indian community. And I think even the last year and a half, I should say, with the FCOs, we find the conditions of the Indian community worse off than what it was before.
Datuk, would you also like to weigh in on this?
Okay. I think as already mentioned that the ethnic figures do show from the police commission report that 50% are Malays, 21% Chinese, 19.7% were Indians. And a more recent study of 257 deaths in custody between 2002 and 2016 showed 42.4% Malays, 18.3% Chinese, 23.4% Indians. So I do agree the disproportionate representation. And the root causes have been there for a long while. Different government agencies have been addressing them. But one of the key problems is actually measurement of poverty. Because per measurement of poverty has taken an income measurement, the PLI, it also went on to use multidimensional poverty, health, education, living conditions, and so forth. If you take the dimensions and indicators, it will not capture young Indian youth in urban contexts because there's a kind of downplaying of the deprivations experienced in urban poverty. You might be in a flat, you might have more than 2,000 ringgit, So you won't be captured in the poverty figures, but you're being captured in the crime figures. And so then you are pushed as delinquent, criminal. But if you look at delivery systems at a district level, they are not taking into account local realities.
And so why would you say that is? Does this just come down to a lack of redelineation measures? You know, why is it that it doesn't reflect?
The indicators used. You see, kelayakan in government allocation of resources is very critical. There is a cutoff point. If you are, 1,000 ringgit or 900, then you are entitled to this. You can get this assistance. You can get into some affirmative action programs on the ground. These indicators for urban poverty is not strong enough. Even with the revision, the 12th Malaysia plan is coming up, but unable to discuss the details in public and the allocations because Parliament is not meeting the scrutiny, the review. So while the ethnic question is important, it is being dismissed. Civil society, ethnic-based advocacy, politicians are using other indicators that captures the reality of deprivation on the ground. So government needs to take a hard look to say, okay, death in custody, disproportionate number of gangs, what do you do to resolve? By throwing a few thousand ringgit here and there, or even a million, would not address it if the root issues of education, educational opportunities, what might be raised, job opportunities enhanced, it will not take place.
So the question there that you raised that the government has to ask of themselves, how do we resolve this? I'm going to pose that to the both of you this morning for your thoughts. And I know this is a very wide issue and there are a lot of different factors to take into consideration, more than we perhaps have time to address today. But in terms of attempting to at least somewhat address the issues of perhaps members of the Indian community living in extreme poverty, being left out of other race-based affirmative action policies that are in place. How do we go about doing this? What's your gauge of the effectiveness of measures like the Malaysian Indian Blueprint, which was put forward under the 11th Malaysia Plan, which it appears to now be suspended? You know, have measures like that been effective?
And I thought the report actually reflected the Indian community's problem in a way that could lead to some kind of policy prescription that could address some of the key issues. In terms of policy and in terms of implementation, nothing concretely came out of that.
There was, I think it was 100 million allocated to it per year. Did you see no concrete result?
Unfortunately, I think a whole lot of that money that you referred to was spent on politics and politicking at that time for the government wanting to get the support of Indian community. And also, I think what needs to be recognized is we need to target groups that we want to allocate the money, as well as the kind of empowerment programs that we want to introduce. We suffer from that, and partly because we do not know what are the problems that the Indian community is facing. I must say, poverty cuts across all races, Orang Asli, Indian, Chinese, and Malays. But there is a uniqueness in all of these communities in terms of how we understand poverty from a race standpoint. But we cannot use one-shoe-fits-all approach. And therefore, the approach that we take towards the Indian community has to be different because of its history, because of its, the legacies of the Indian community for the plantation, the urban sectors. We need to have a review or rethink about social protection in the country. We need to look at empowerment, especially of women in this country. At the same time, at the national level, you look at wages. Minimum wages doesn't apply anymore. It's 1,200 at max. So we should now look at living wages that Ben Negara has been talking about and Khazana has also been talking about. We need to look at social protection that fits all, that works for everybody and not for one groups. The third thing is to look at the informal sector. If you're looking specifically on the Indian community, Indian employment, especially women, in the informal sector is very high. So at this time, the victim of that of the MCO are largely women. And therefore, we need to address this issue of Indian poverty in the informal sector urgently. What the government has to do is to create the enabling environment, not only for the Indian community, but also for the Orang Asli, for the Chinese, as well as the Malay community as well. Because poverty is not race-based.
I just wanted to say the Malaysian Indian blueprint and the department that was set up, one, for the first time in the history, a government document was issued by the Prime Minister of the day. Whether it was politicized, whether it was weak or what, it had the branding of the Economic Planning Unit, and it was a government document that remains. It's being edited now or updated. Second, for the first time, a department was set up in the Prime Minister's department and now in the Ministry of National Unity with a Director General. Whether it's effective or not, it is a system within the government. But Charles, you know, whether you like it or not, PH slashed the staff team to what it is now from the BN time. But that's the reality. Yeah? The objective is to look at whether people have access to all the services in government, exactly what Charles is talking about. And there was this 100 million special grant. There was so much of complaint during BN's time, so much of complaint during PH time, so much of complaint even today or during the PN government time, because there isn't enough transparency and accountability in the process. I myself was accused that when I ran it in the early stages with a very small fund. But I think what is needed, and maybe this is something which needs to be pushed, I'm sure Charles would agree, that it should be moved away from political control. It needs to be held more accountable to the community at large. If that maybe takes place, then it's a missionary within government to address the concerns. All others of us are outside the civil service and the delivery system. It's not a total solution, but at least it might emphasize the deprivation of poverty, the calculations, the measurement need to be taken into account through an agency within government, which will require right qualified people who have the competencies, the passion to work in along with other agencies.
I think more transparency and accountability is certainly in order. But thank you so much to the both of you, gentlemen, for joining me this morning. It's been a pleasure having you on the show.
Pleasure. Thanks, Lynn.
I've been speaking with Webby Charles Santiago, MP for Klang, and Professor Datuk Dr. Denison Jaya Surya, former member of the Police Commission and Suhakam. BFM has reached out to both the Home Ministry and the Royal Malaysian Police for comment, but have yet to receive a response. This has been The Breakfast Grill. I'm Lynn Mark, BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U-Mobile. Unleashing unlimited potential every day.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.